Trevor Lawrence went from liking pro football, he loves it. And it's it's really fun to see. And, man, if Buffalo can get by this, Kate, this might be the hardest test they could have in the playoffs. I really believe that. Jacksonville, big, powerful, tough, hard-coached against a team that really relies a little more on speed, smaller, everything like that. So it's really an interesting game. But I'm just going to go there and say, if I had to pick a winner, I'm taking Jacksonville.
All right, put it on the board, baby. Put it on the board. Put it on the bulletin board. There it is. Chris Sims and his pick for... Was that Chris Sims or was it Phil? Was that Phil? It sounded like Phil. Okay, thank you. I thought so. I thought when you said Phil, and then my brain went to Chris, but it sounded like Phil. Okay, there you go. Chris, of course, is the son of Phil. But anyway, put it on the bulletin board. There you go. Phil Sims picking the Jacksonville Jaguars over the Buffalo Bills. I do agree, though. It's a tough matchup. It's a 1-point spread. And if the Bills do win this game, I think I could find my way to saying, okay, the other team they play next week, Denver, Houston, Pittsburgh. I know Houston. Going to Houston would be a tough matchup for them. But you could find your way to different ways you like it better for different reasons than this one. But you got to go take care of business first. We'll get to Paul Hamilton in a moment on the Sabres. We'll get to Sean McDermott on the injury front on a Friday. And then we're going to get to Pat Hammer at the bottom of the hour on Jacksonville weather. But first, let's go out to Derek, who's been waiting from Boston. Hi, Derek.
Sal, how are you? Always a pleasure listening to you. I definitely feel like taking care of business this week would be big. The one thing that I did like about Brian Daboll was when we did come to the playoffs, I always felt like there was a wrinkle in that offense, some sort of different plays that we hadn't seen that all of us were like, whoa, where'd that come from? But I just don't want it to – we can't take another heartbreaker. We've had so many heartbreakers, you know, you'd feel the same way. We just can't take another heartbreaker. I know they have such a great kicker. I'd hate to see the last possession. All they need is 20 yards, and this guy kicks his crazy kick. But hopefully not. Go Bills. And I also just wanted to share, last week, my wife and I and our little guy and our two moms, we actually went up to Buffalo for the last game, and I'm so glad I did that. I know the game didn't mean much, but my wife was like, you should go because you're going to regret not going. And it was unbelievable. Honestly, it was such a good time. We had a great tailgate. Great experience. Just wanted to share that. And go Bills. Let's make this the year.
You got it. Yeah, Derek, great story. Glad you shared that. I'm glad you got to go to the game. Really cool. We'll see if Joe Brady has anything up his sleeve. Joe Brady, by the way, news this morning, the Ravens have reportedly requested an interview with Joe Brady for their head coach position. Let's go to Gino up next. Hi, Gino.
Phil, how's it going?
Good, thanks.
But I feel confident about this week. But the reason I'm calling is, you know, the last 20 years, the Patriots and Chiefs have killed teams with their tight end and slot receivers. You know, Brady did it with Edelman and Gronk. Mahomes did it with Kelce. You know, we have Kincaid, Knox, Shakir. And I feel like we just don't use them to their ability all the time. I feel like this weekend, if we can just, you know, bang those 5-6 yard passes, and then I think that's the way we're going to win the game.
Yeah, well, listen, I like that a lot because there are some numbers that show that the Jags defense is good, but tight ends, middle of the field is where they've kind of had some issues this year at times. Dalton Kincaid's been big for the Bills this year. There's no doubt as well. And I like the fact, I never told you earlier what I liked about Josh. Josh said he did self-scouting over the week that he was off. Joe Brady said, you're not playing, do some self-scouting. And the way he said, he's like, man, I look and go, I stink or something like that. Because he was missing so many guys and didn't take the free checkdowns and didn't take the easy money. And I think you might see a little bit more of that this week. And I like that. I like that he's thinking that way because playoff football, you got to take what's given to you sometimes. You can't make that mistake. And that's the challenge in front of the Bills. Paul Hamilton joins us right now here on the Western Hotline, just off a plane and a flight from New York City where the Sabres beat the New York Rangers last night. And the Sabres continue on a roll. They are now in a playoff position. Paul, another really, really solid night last night for the Buffalo Sabres, from penalty kill and shorthanded goals to goaltending, blocking shots. It's really starting to feel like it's coming together like an actual good hockey team, if I can say that.
You know what I think is to like about the game, believe it or not, is the third period. And you might say, well, it didn't go real well in the third period as far as, you know, the Rangers really came on and really poured it on. They score 51 seconds into the period to make it 3-2. Next thing you know, the shots are 11-0 and the Sabres can't get out of their end. But I think the reason I like it is because you saw a lot of adversity. This team has never handled adversity very well until now. And, all right, you have the adversity, and Colton Ellis said himself he'd want that goal back that he gave up 51 seconds into the period. So you give up a goal like that. Now it's 3-2. Now the Rangers are all over you. They're throwing the kitchen sink at you. And, you know, your goaltender's hanging in there. You're hanging in there, though. It's still 3-2. You know, so you face that adversity. Then you take that penalty. The Sabres just can't seem to get out of their game late in the third period. Peyton Krebs, a double minor for high sticking. There's a little over 5 minutes left to go in regulation. Now there's more adversity that you're going to have to face. You're basically going to have to kill penalties the rest of the period with a one-goal lead. Well, that only took, what, about 20 seconds or so to alleviate that problem, because the Sabres come down. They score that shorthanded goal. What a shot that was by Samuelson, getting it by the ear hole of Jonathan Quick's face mask and under the crossbar for a goal. He looked like he was in too far, but obviously he wasn't. And now you've got a 4-2 lead. Again, you have faced down adversity. You know, that was there for you, and you easily could have lost that game. And you know what, Sal? I bet last year they would have lost that game 9 out of 10 times.
And maybe the Vancouver game, too, by the way. Maybe the Vancouver game, the way things started going in the third period.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So they seem now to be able to handle adversity and kind of just look it in the eye and say, okay. And they found a way to leave that arena with 2 points and a victory when it looked like the Rangers were starting to take over the game. The first 40 minutes, Sabres did real well. I thought Ellis looked great. I thought, they got on the board first in the first period and took the 2-0 lead. Once they got the lead, which was like 4 minutes into the game, they never relinquished the lead. They held it throughout. And I think we're seeing a maturity of this team, that it has grown up, because there was a lot of, hand-wringing after that Columbus game. How can you lose to the Blue Jackets? This is, it's like, well, yeah, they just did win 10 in a row,
Yeah, I know.
They're not going to win 50 in a row. But to me, that Columbus game, and I said it then, really didn't mean a whole lot. You know what's going to mean something is the next game. Mm-hmm. Are you ready? How are you going to respond to this loss? All right, you had a bad day. How are you going to respond to that? Well, they responded with 2 wins. They go out and beat Vancouver. They go into New York and beat the New York Rangers. To me, that's the response you need. That's what winning teams do. Every team's going to have a bad game, except maybe Colorado. But every team is going to have a bad game. It's how you respond to that bad game. And, I'm rather impressed that you responded by 2 victories.
Paul, what has been the secret for Matthias Samuelson to be unlocked this year like this?
Sometimes it takes defensemen longer, and that's why I caution people with Owen Power. Although I think Owen Power has actually played better in the last X amount of games, however many you want to say. Everybody wants to give up on guys too early. And Samuelson was one. People wanted to buy him out. And it's like, well, that's a bad idea. If you bought him out before this season, he's on your books for 10 years. Bad idea. Even if he doesn't improve or whatever. But I think, I hate to say it, maybe the best thing to happen to him was when Thompson got hit and there was no response. Mm. I mean, I wondered if he could even come back from that in the locker room for that happening. And he has more than come back from it. And look at the way that the toughness he plays with. Something that Lindy Ruff, ever since he's gotten here, has tried to convince him. Use your size. Use your strength. I don't care if you fight. That's not what we're talking about here. And he has been much more physical this year, on top of the good play, on top of adding offense to what is good defense, killing plays and those types of things. So he just seems to be brimming with confidence. But, just the fact that he's willing to use his size, willing to knock people down, and you don't have to drill people through the back wall. But if you use your size and strength, you can win a lot more battles, and I think he's doing that.
Jason Zucker returns to the lineup. How important is he to this team? They win a couple of games. Of course, they had the 10-game winning streak. He wasn't really on the team, on the ice for any of that. But how important is he? We saw the goal last night as well.
Yeah, he missed 10 games and they won them all.
I know.
He's like, okay, I guess you don't need me. But look at the power play. The power play hadn't scored in 8 games.
Mm-hmm.
So he's where he's supposed to be. And you know in sports how you got to make your own breaks, because you say to yourself, how come the other team always gets these breaks in front of the net, but the Sabres never get those garbage goals or whatever? Well, that's because winning teams know how to be around the net. And in order to get a break to go in off a skate or whatever, you got to be there. You can't be on the perimeter. And so, you know, I'm a firm believer in you make your breaks. Well, the goal went in off his back. Great. That's a lucky goal. I understand that. But it doesn't go in off his back if he's not where he's supposed to be. If he's on the perimeter or someplace else other than in front of the net when Darlene winds up with that shot, the shot doesn't come back, hit him in the back, and go in the net. So that's what I talk about when I think good teams make their own breaks, because they're where they're supposed to be. And if you're where you're supposed to be, then pucks might go in off a leg, or they might go in off a skate, or they might go in off your back, or, you know, things like that. And Jason Zucker is the epitome of that. He knows where he's supposed to be on the power play. And a power play that hadn't scored in 8 games, his second game back, guess who gets the power play goal? Jason Zucker.
The Sabres also really doing a great job at killing penalties. Number 2 in the league this year, Paul. They get, obviously, a nice goal last night from Ryan McLeod. Alex Tuch, one of the best penalty killers in the league. How about that aspect of the game, and what's been the difference this year?
Those two are so good as a pair. It reminds the older folks in the audience of Don Luce and Craig Ramsey, pair that they were back in the 70s when they were up for the Selke, and they were just – I don't know if the Sabres have seen a pair like that since those two. And McLeod and Tuch definitely qualify for that. And just the epitome of McLeod. We don't sit here and talk about empty net goals. That was desire and the willingness to win.
Put that on a film and go show every young hockey player.
He missed the net.
Yep.
But what did he do? He turned the Jets on like he was shot out of a cannon, because he wanted to win that hockey game.
Yep.
He wanted it more than the Rangers, who actually were ahead of him if they would have just hustled a little bit. He just took off, hustled, got to the puck first, and got the easy empty net goal. That's a guy who wants to win hockey games right there.
Love it.
And that's the kind of effort we're seeing from this team right now.
Paul Hamilton on the Western Hotline. Paul, let's get to a couple injury updates. I think Lyon and Kesselring are the only ones I have here that I know that are on IR right now. And then there's the Kulik update that Lindy Ruff gave. So if you can run through those.
Yeah, Kulik really is not on the ice or anything. And when you're dealing with blood clots, you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not a doctor, but I think they got to dissolve. And you just don't know when that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So he can't really do a whole lot physically. And still isn't.
He's still hoping, I guess, that they play, but there's no real clarity on that yet, right?
Yeah. Okay. They're hoping to get him back by the end of the year, but you just don't know. Alex Lyon, Lindy said before they left for New York, 7 to 10 days. So I guess that would be 5 to 8 days right now, because that was 2 days ago. So, you know, he's getting there. And Kesselring, he was hoping to get him on the ice. Now they're off today, but he could still be down at the arena getting on the ice. But they were hoping to get him on the ice by the end of the week. So we'll see. I doubt very much, since he hasn't been in a practice, that he would play tomorrow. But you may see him in the morning skate tomorrow. You know, we'll have to wait and see. So, and of course, as you know, Danforth had the broken kneecap that he got 4 games into the season. So I have no idea. I'm not used to broken kneecaps when I'm talking about injury. So I have no idea how long that takes.
And tomorrow night should be fun at the arena with the Bills playing the next day. The Ducks are in town, a team that, you know, it's a team that you can have, very beatable team, I guess you'd say. They're having a decent season, but, you know, it's going to be really energetic in the arena on a Saturday night. Before I get to Sean McDermott and I let go of you, Paul, here, didn't get a chance to ask you, last week about your memories inside Highmark Stadium. If you have one you want to share, maybe your first game, maybe a game over the years where you covered a Bills game or something like that.
You know what it is for me? It was the very first Winter Classic.
Oh, there you go. I love it.
Where I'm down on the next to the glass as we're broadcasting. I just wish I would have seen more Sabre goals. If they lose 5-4, that would have been great. I think the fans, but they only had one goal, but the sound. And you know this because you're down there. But this is something that I didn't realize. The sound that comes down when they scored that goal was just amazing. It was an amazing experience, probably my the best thing that I've done in my career is to cover the Winter Classic down there. And I've also talked about a lot of concerts that I've seen down there when I was younger, the Stones, The Who, Peter Frampton, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. You know, we can always all talk about the Bills, and there's plenty of ones I remember them. Even one that people don't talk about, I remember the Hail Mary to Roland Hooks against the New England Patriots was a memory. You know, I remember Ahmad Rashad back when I was a kid in junior high school on Monday Night Football catching a slant to win a game. You know, when I'm thinking maybe it might have been their first Monday Night game. I'm not sure. But still, you know, it's you know, something like that. So I kind of went deeper in the memory bank because, of course, the comeback against the Oilers, we all know that.
Right.
But I was trying to go deeper in the memory bank.
And how about this? Let me ask you this: what about your first playoff game? Remember, mine is the 81 wild card at Shea. Bill Simpson, the interception. What's your first Bills playoff memory?
Oh, I would go back to the Steelers in the 70s. As I said, I was back junior high school, maybe grade school back then.
Yeah.
You know, so even you know, when some of the earlier ones, now I didn't go back to War Memorial Stadium in those games, but O.J. Simpson, of course, I remember O.J. Simpson. So anything past that would have been, you know, I didn't get to go to a lot of games, maybe one a year sometimes, maybe not. But I wasn't in the stadium a lot early on in life, but as it went on, and then the last time I was at a Bills game in the stands, I would have been in college. I kind of figured that out. I was sitting there for a concert going, when was the last time I was in these stands? And I thought, it was college, the last time I was in the stands for a Bills game at home.
Real quick, Paul, I did forget. I want to ask you real quick. Some buzz yesterday about the Sabres possibly in discussions or part of the mix to host the 2026 draft. Is that right?
Yeah, the Sabres weren't commenting on that, but I have talked to some people about that, and what John Butchergrass was reporting is correct. They're trying to get it. Now, it's not the draft that everybody's thinking, you know, where all the teams are there,
right,
and the tables and all that. It would be like what it was last year, where the players are there.
Okay.
But the teams are still, like the Sabres are still probably at the stadium. So the players were there, and they'd come up on stage and shake Gary Bettman's hands. And then they did those awkward Zooms with the teams after that.
Oh, yeah.
So it would be – that's what it would be, is because that was in Los Angeles where the players were. So the players would be around and be introduced and go up on stage and get their jersey, but the teams would not be there.
The decentralized draft, that's right. Okay, Paul, we're going to let you go. Sean McDermott's going to come up here shortly on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Have a great weekend tomorrow night.
You
Sabres,
too.
Ducks, 7 o'clock, and Paul will be all over it at PM 1717 on X. Thanks, buddy.
Enjoy Jacksonville.
All right, thank you very much. Paul Hamilton right there, and it is a Buffalo Football Friday, so we're going to talk more football again. We had to squeeze in the Sabres, though. They won 10 in a row. They lose a game. They win two more. So what? They won 12 out of the last 13, and they're in a playoff spot right now. They got a game tomorrow night against the Anaheim Ducks at home, 18 hours before the Bills kick off in Jacksonville against the Jaguars on Sunday. And of course, this is a Buffalo Football Friday brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash, call Salino, call the 8s, and by Crosby's Pizza and Subs, Crosby's Hometown Fuel, game day ready since 1922. We will take a timeout quickly here, and when we come back, we'll have Bills head coach Sean McDermott give us the Friday injury report and game status of any players who aren't going to play Sunday in their wildcard matchup in Jacksonville.
This presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
McLeod, though, he can score shorthanded goals. He's got the puck. He feeds it through. Samuelson, tough angle, shot. Scores! Oh, my goodness! Unbelievable! Unbelievable! Oh, man. Do you believe what you just saw?
That's going to be his seventh goal, and this is the best one.
Well, all apologies to his overtime winner in Detroit. I mean, I think there's a debate to be had as to which one was his best this year. But indeed, it might well be a Sammy day here on Sabres Live. Welcome in. A Friday edition, no less, Marty.
Friday, yes. I mean, we got a big one tomorrow night against the Anaheim Ducks. The Bills are on Sunday, so it'll be a busy weekend, obviously. Lots of hockey. Not so much tonight, but tomorrow there'll be plenty. So, obviously, we're keeping an eye on the standings, even though this was game 42, but it's been back and forth the whole, you know, the last few weeks when it comes to wild card spot, the Atlantic Division, and everything. But when it comes down to Matthias Samuelsson, that goal was probably the best shot he's ever had when it comes to a goal, because there wasn't a lot of room. And I love his explanation. Well, we all know Jonathan Quick likes to go down, and we've seen him play, and I've watched him, you know, growing up. That was maybe a dig, but, you know, let alone that he scored on him short side like that. That was a big goal. While, you know, Peyton Krebs was in the box for a double minor high sticking penalty, that could have changed the game in a negative way. The positive was all that we're talking about.
How many Sabres defensemen in team history do you think have scored a shorthanded goal at MSG?
Wow. At MSG, I'm going to say four.
Two. Matthias Samuelsson is one.
And who is the other one? Give me an era.
No. Just think of the greatest defense scorer.
I was going to say Housley.
Bill Housley did it twice at MSG.
Oh, he did it twice. Okay.
But Matthias Samuelsson is the only other one. Isn't that amazing? This is also...
I was worried that maybe it was going to be an unknown, like a Richard Schmelick somehow got a shorthanded goal. That's why, like, my head went to Housley, but I'm like, there's got to be something.
This is a rabbit hole Friday on Sabres Live. There have been many tunnels burrowed through already as it pertained to shorthanded goals and defense scoring. So now that you just opened the other can of worms, most shorthanded goals by a Sabres defenseman in team history.
But I'm going to stick with Housley.
Nope.
No. Okay.
Two of them, and they each have five.
Five shorthanded goal
by
a defenseman. Wow. Because I mentioned Richard Schmelick, I'm starting to think that maybe it would be somebody from that era.
Like Richard Schmelick and Alexei Zhitnik.
Okay. I was going to say Zhitnik as the...
Partners.
Partners. So I wasn't going to say Schmelick because I'm like, I don't know that Schmelly would be the one to get it, but Zhitnik would definitely have been one. So that's who I was going to go with.
Well, I don't know if I would have said either would have definitely been one in franchise history, but they are the leaders from the blue line, each with five shorthanded goals. Height and Housley both have four. Korab and Kalinin both have three. Now, Samuelsson became
I'm impressed that Dmitry Kalinin had three and is on that list too.
Samuelsson became the 25th defenseman ever to score a shorthanded goal for the Sabres. He became the 122nd Sabre ever to score a shorthanded goal. So
you want me to name all the defensemen in Sabres history that did not score a shorthanded goal?
No, but you know what I will say? It's shocking the players who never did score a shorthanded goal. Just based on the sheer volume, the production that they had over their career, you would have thought accidentally they would have found themselves in
an empty net, an empty net shorthanded goal.
Rick Martin never scored a shorthanded goal.
Yeah.
Dave Andrechuk never scored a shorthanded goal.
Wow.
And the most surprising, but he had one, only one. Danny Gare only had one shorthanded goal as a Sabre. Now, granted, he was playing in the Luce and Ramsey era.
Yeah,
and they were the lead killers, but still. Anyway, it's wild.
Yeah, but you would think, like you said, end of game...
Sure.
6-on-4, we get an empty net goal shorthanded, right? Because to be honest, like last night, McLeod's goal was almost a shorthanded goal empty netter.
Yes,
Peyton Krebs stepped on the ice for 1 second and ended up with a plus one on that play right as McLeod shot it all the way down. No icing, but by the time he got there, the penalty had expired and it was not a shorthanded goal. They almost finished the game with two shorthanded goals.
We will have Shayna Goldman later on in the show. We will talk more about the next matchup for Buffalo, which is Anaheim tomorrow. The Ducks have lost 8 in a row and 10 of 11. But let's continue on the Samuelsson train with the coach and Sammy himself.
Well, it was probably as good as any goal scorer. He might be getting the label as a goal scorer now if he keeps those up.
Were you surprised he was going? He took that to the net. I mean, Lafreniere kind of dropped off him, gave him some room. But initially, I don't think he was going to the net in that play.
I don't think so. I don't think he was until he saw that they backed off, and then he realized he's got some room, and thought he'd throw one at the goalie, and you know, that's a goal scorer shot right there, that short side over the shoulder right next to the ear.
Definitely was trying to go short side there, yeah. I mean, I think everyone kind of knows Quick style, you know, grow up watching him and stuff. So he's more of a down low goalie for sure. So yeah, that was just glad that one didn't go high and wide and wrap around. But yeah, trying to go short side for sure.
Samuelson now trails Craig Ramsey by 26 for the all-time shorthanded goal lead. We'll continue to monitor that chase as Sammy's career unfolds in blue and gold. And black
I love
and
what
red
Sammy just said. It didn't go high and wide and started their breakout. The rim
happens
around
a lot.
That happens a lot. But you know what, though? That's why, like, I know we talk a lot about missed shots, right? How many missed shots and somebody missing the net. But I've had that conversation with a lot of goal scorers. And often they're like, so what do you want me to do? Shoot in the goalie's chest? I'm wanting to pick a corner. If I miss it by 2 inches on the outside, it goes around the wall and rims. And I get yelled at from, but if I miss it by 3 feet and hit the goalie in the chest, nobody complains. They're like, oh, good shot. It's not a good shot. I missed my spot by 3 feet. But if I miss it by 2 inches, I get yelled at. So sometimes that's the fine line, right? Of missing outside the net or missing inside the net.
100%. And Samuelson has 2 game winners this year, which has him tied for 10th in the NHL among defensemen. And he's one of only 8 defensemen across the league that have 2 shorthanded points this season. So now, just to reflect back on a name that did come up earlier this week in Sabres history, and I can't remember the context of it, but how about this one? There's 2 Sabres in franchise history who scored just 1 goal for the team, but that 1 goal was shorthanded.
Wow.
Can you name
them? And you said that name was...
He looks like me.
Andre Benoit, okay.
Andre Benoit. So,
yes, that was his birthday. That's why his name came up. That was his birthday the other day.
I remember the game vividly. We were in Detroit right before Christmas. Benoit's goal was stunning. The celebration was better. Buffalo was up 3-1. Detroit scored 5 in a row and won 6-3. And Michael Frolik was the only other Sabre to have 1 goal and have it shorthanded, but his was in an empty net, so it's completely different than the situation we're talking about. And Buffalo's net was occupied last night by Colton Ellis, and it was a busy area around Ellis in his return after a month on the sidelines, especially in period number 3. What'd you think?
What I thought is there was a lot of scramble, and the Sabres were overwhelmed in the third period, and Lindy Ruff addressed that, and he did say, like, we didn't handle their pressure very well, especially in the third period. But one thing that he liked, and one thing that Matthias Samuelson mentioned as well, is that every time there was a mad scramble around the net, they did have 5 white jerseys right there. Now, often Colton Ellis was laying down, snow angeling it, like doing all of the non-technical elements to a game, you know, when you're playing net. But it's about the fight. And I think that's what we're seeing, right? We're seeing Bo Byram getting in the way of a shot, blocking a shot and limping off the ice a little bit. Well, the referee also took that one in the face on that block shot. But
any update on McDougal, by the way?
I've not seen any update. And just a little sidebar there. When we were in Ottawa before Christmas, when I walked in, Eric Furlatte was walking in at the same time. He was a referee. Anyway, I've known him a long time. And I'm like, how's the schedule this year? He goes, we are all over the place because there's so many guys that are hurt. And we are being like shipped from one to next. And we're so it's not helping when you see another referee going down. And hopefully he's fine. And, you know, the referees are not being outworked because they're all going to get a break in February. Some of them are going to the Olympics. But it's a tough job. So that's that. But I feel like the desperation was there, and Colton Ellis' desperation was definitely there. I thought he looked really good early in the game. His positioning was well. He made a couple of big saves. That was great. And then it became scrambly. And that's fine. Like the game's not always going to be a perfect game. And he didn't like that second goal he gave up.
Yeah.
It's a tough goal to give up early in the third period. But you know what's a lot easier to talk about? Talking about a bad goal in a win, like saying, yeah, I don't like that goal. Well, you won, so you can kind of forget it. Lindy Ruff saying, I don't love that we didn't handle the pressure, and now that's two games in a row with Vancouver the other night, third period, under overwhelmed last night, same thing. But you're talking about him in wins, and you can go out there and put a little bit of a positive spin into the video session, the clips, and having one-on-one meetings and going forward. The same thing works for Colton Ellis and his performance last night. Was it the best he's looked all year? Probably not, but was it a big win to keep it going? Absolutely.
Team is off today. Reaction to Ellis from last night.
A-plus game, for sure. But we know he's, when we put him in, he's been ready to play. He gave us a great game. You know, he worked hard to get back and be ready, and I thought did an excellent job tonight.
Yeah, he played unreal. You know, made some huge saves. Yeah, I mean, they obviously had a lot of chances there, and you know, not only in the third, but he played unreal all game.
So one other storyline from last night is where
did Lindy say that about me more often when I was playing A plus? He never said that in the post game. Marty was A plus tonight. Like I want to go back and try to see if we can find it, but it wasn't there.
You're so sensitive. Last night, Buffalo scored even strength, shorthanded power play, empty net. The power play is an interesting one because Zucker got the goal. It doesn't really matter how. It's just the fact you get rid of the offer that you've had of late, and now 1-for-17 after that moment, and maybe a step forward. Because, look, Rangers are actually a really tough team to score against 5-on-5. So the fact Buffalo found multiple ways to score last night is it's impressive, and it's just another way to look at all the things they've done well in winning 12 of the last 13. But what's your quick takeaway from the one power play tally?
One quick takeaway is it was a monkey off their back on the power play, off the back of Jason Zucker, which is a little shot that went off his back. Number two, how often have I talked about that shot from the middle from Rasmus Dahlin?
A lot.
That is the number one thing on the power play. If you can establish that shot from the middle, you're going to create opportunities, not just on the shot rebound, but also now everybody's going to cover the middle and you're going to open the sides, the flank for the one-timer. And look, Zucker gets the goal. Who's the other guy that has been having an impact on the power play while Zucker was gone? Was Josh Doan. He's the one that started to play in the corner. He made a nice play to Thompson. It gets the point. So I'm looking at that goal, even though it was a fluke type of goal, you know, quick makes a save off Zucker's nameplate and in. It's the lead up to the goal and some of the things that they've done. And I'm like, you do that more often, you're not going to go 1-for-19 or whatever it was. You're going to get more goals because of the details prior to the actual goal.
1-for-17, easy to remember because it was the 17 on the back. So
you're right. You did say it was the 1-for-17.
I'm just testing whether you actually listen. And I'm guilty of not doing so.
I was talking about Josh Doan. He's 91 and his dad was 19. So I was like, I don't know. So.
None of what we've just talked about really, like, it matters. But there's one thing that truly matters. The standings.
Yes.
And Buffalo found their way back into wildcard two last night and will be avid Hawks fans this evening as there are very few games on the schedule, but Washington is one of them as they take on the Hot Hawks who've won 4 in a row.
Yeah, obviously, Washington has not had a good go of late. I mean, last end, they're 3-5-2. They're giving up a lot of goals. Ovi keeps scoring, though. I mean, like, he's been scoring goals, which is fun to watch, but they've slipped. They slipped a little bit, in, especially in the Metro, but now in the wild card spot. I'm looking at the standings, and I'm saying, okay, how do you get to Tampa? How do you get to Detroit? How do you get to Montreal? Well, you know what? You're playing Montreal 3 times this month. That maybe is how you get to Montreal. Montreal is 6 points ahead, and you have 2 games in hand. So that, to me, is where you got to go. You got 3 games in hand on Detroit. Wild card is nice, but I would love for the Sabres, and if you're watching MSG, to jump over to the left side of your screen and be in that conversation as one of the top 3 teams in the Atlantic.
Of course, Montreal and Detroit both won last night. Montreal has defeated the Sabres 5 consecutive times over the last couple of seasons, and Buffalo tries to halt that the next time they play, which is, of course, reunion night, January 15th. That is less than a week away at KeyBank Center. And, of course, it's a homestand. This is a big opportunity. Five straight in front of the home fans, which means emphasis on the five-game pack. Get yours today. Savings on single-game pricing, priority access to playoff tickets, flexibility to bundle your favorite games. It's all available at sabres.com/5. So we're looking forward to, you know, it's going to be a real packed building tomorrow when the Ducks come in. Yeah. What's the challenge here against an Anaheim team that has lost 8 in a row, 10 of 11, and I had to do some fact-checking again just to believe what I've been saying. Marty, they are giving up exactly 5 goals per game during this 11-game run of futility that has taken them from an 8-point cushion as division leaders in the Pacific. They were 8 points clear of anybody who was out of the playoffs, and now they find themselves out of the top 8 in the West.
Yeah, the challenge for me is you're going to be getting those questions, right, tomorrow morning. Anaheim's given up a lot of goals. You've watched the highlights. You're keeping up on it. You're going to get the pre-scout. They're giving up a lot of goals. It's not to think you're going to go out and be able to score 5 or 6, because what was the key in New York last night? You only gave up 2. What has been the key through the last 13 games where you won 12 of them is how few goals you've given up. And if you think that you're going to go play the Anaheim Ducks and say, hey, you know what? That's just point night. Let's go get some goals. Mm-hmm. You're going to lose. You're going to lose if that's the way you're approaching the game. And I don't think it will be hard to get the Sabres to say, let's continue to just lock it down. But Anaheim does give up. Like at 5-on-5, they're 22nd in the league in expected goals against. Mm-hmm. The Sabres have moved up and now are 10th. Like they are much better defensively and also are not giving up as many chances as they used to, which is the difference. And yeah. I think I would have those numbers everywhere in the locker room. Like, why are you winning? Because you are not giving up chances the way that you used to.
Ducks managed to lose to Freddie Anderson and the Canes last night. Anderson had been winless in his previous 9 games, so that's just salt to the wound for an ineffective Anaheim team right now. And Carolina's turned it around here with 3 straight wins. You know, later in this homestand, as early as Monday, as a matter of fact, the Panthers are going to be in town. It'll be game 4 for them of their 6-game trip, which is an 0-2 start already for the Panthers, and didn't have Marchand last night. So it's really...
And Tkachuk is almost ready to come back. Did not yet, but we'll see if Marchand and Tkachuk are going to be in the lineup on Monday. But that's, they lost to Montreal last night and they got blown out of the water.
Well, they did. So let's follow that Montreal theme, because you're talking about chasing down the Habs. And not only has Buffalo lost 5 in a row to Montreal over the last couple of years, they've lost 9 of 12 going back to the 22-23 season. So this has been a really challenging matchup. And now the Habs have a new secret top line scorer, not so secret, in Texier after he was cut by St. Louis, and he's come in and produced 14 points in 22 games, including 6 points in his last 2 and his first NHL hat trick last night.
He's been going back and forth on the top line. Zach Bolduc has been playing top line, but Texier now is there, had the hat trick, did score the all Marty hating goal after the empty net goal. But the big thing with Montreal right now, and if I say the Sabres' success come from their defensive game, the Montreal Canadiens' success is not coming from Suzuki. It's not coming from Caulfield. It's not even coming from Lane Hudson as much. And goaltending, they've got a 3-goalie monster going on right now. It has been Kapanen, Demidov, and Slafkovský, that second line, that has really led the Kapanen scored his 15th goal of the year. People are going to be, we're talking about Sammy Kapanen, Kasperi Kapanen. No, that's Oliver Kapanen. That's one that we've not heard a lot, but he's got 15. And maybe they found a second line since they moved Slafkovský off the top line. He's been just a bear. Last night he was awarded an empty net goal as he was, the stick got slashed out of his hand. But even that, the move that he did to go to the middle. And so that line to me is the one that the Sabres will have to really watch for when they play them 3 times this month.
Montreal is 8-1-2 in their last 11. They have points in 13 of their last 15. That's why they and Tampa and Detroit are staying where they are right now in the Atlantic. Of course, you mentioned empty netters. We mentioned the Wings. Congratulations, Pat Kane, on his 500th goal last night. He's only the 50th player in NHL history to hit this plateau, and he's only the fifth U.S.-born player to do it. And of course, because I love empty netters, he got it in the empty net. So I ask you, how many empty netters for Pat Kane amidst the 500?
41.
27. Do you know who leads the NHL all time? Alexander Ovechkin.
Ovechkin, yeah. And Wayne Gretzky's second.
69 empty netters for Ovechkin, 27 for Pat Kane. What a difference over those two who've had almost parallel careers timing-wise here. Yeah. Ovi obviously started a little bit earlier.
Well, Kane has 500 goals. If he had 900 and some, maybe that number would be 41 or 50. But it was interesting because it was 6 minutes left. They pulled a goalie. And as we watch on the screen, I'm not so sure Alex DeBrincat stayed onside on that play, which would have been an absolute disaster if Vancouver had challenged on Patrick. They weren't going to challenge that.
I got news for you. He still would have scored again later the way Vancouver
probably
going.
They would have given him another opportunity. Great on Patrick Kane. The first goal he scored was one of those very, very kind of unassuming Patrick Kane where you give him so much space and he comes in and just takes a simple shot and everybody's thinking he's going to make a play. Like with those type of players, at times you overthink what they're going to do. And it was very simple for Patrick Kane to come in there and, you know, beat Kevin Lankinen for his 499, now 500. This is going to be off the top of my head. I think the very first U.S. player to 500 was Joe Mullen.
I believe possible. That, sounds right.
I think it was Joe Mullen, the very first U.S. player to 500 goals. So fifth U.S. player for Patrick Kane, yes.
Yeah, the one thing that will happen presumably after the Olympic break is that, but maybe before, if he stays hot, Kane will become the all-time points leader among U.S.-born players as he's about to pass Mike Modano in that regard. Vancouver, by the way, they've dropped 5 in a row and 7 of 8. Now, you speak of, you
I
know,
was correct, by the way.
Of course,
in 1997, Joe Mullen.
Dwight didn't challenge you on it. As far as the other stories about elite scorers, Josh Manson last night had an incredible game for the Avalanche in their 16th straight home win as they routed the Senators. Manson, 2 goals, 2 assists, and a fight. But I think the reality of the moment was funniest in his post-game commentary because Dave was in the crowd watching, and he's like, well, I'm pretty sure my dad has seen this, but I don't think he's seen this. And then he stopped himself. He's like, wait a minute. Nobody's ever seen this. I've never done this before, right? Like, he's never had a Gordie Howe. And I've loved Manson in Colorado since they acquired him from Anna. Yes. I thought it was such a terrific pickup at the time. He's had ultimate success with this team, and he gets so overshadowed for obvious reasons, when you're 3, 4, 5 on the depth chart.
Yeah.
You know, even think back to when Byram was there and it was always Makar and Taves and Byram and even Sammy Girard, who was more prolific offensively at times. Manson is just this beautiful blue liner that deserves all the accolades. So that's why we're throwing bouquets at him today.
Yeah. And obviously, Colorado is 18-0-2 at home this year. They have not lost in regulation. They had lost 2 games in regulation in Florida last week, Florida and Tampa. They were coming back home. Ottawa has not been good, and they were just coming off a loss in Utah, playing on back-to-back. They decide to start Levi Marilainen on back-to-back nights. They pull him after 3 just to have Matt Sogard go in for 17 minutes and give up 5, and you're giving up 8 after 40 minutes. Now, Colorado took the foot off the pedal in the third a little bit. But that was a whooping of the Ottawa Senator in Colorado last night.
And now Ottawa signed James Reimer to a tryout, and we'll see how it unfolds there in the absence of Linus Allmark, who remains on personal leave. Shayna Goldman from The Athletic is coming up, and your opportunity to maybe get away and do some travel is right in front of you as well, thanks to Sabres.com/AAA. Enter the Escape the Cold Vacation Giveaway presented by AAA Travel for your chance to win an all-inclusive trip to the Dominican Republic. AAA Travel, where can we take you today? Shayna Goldman, next on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
You can get your tickets now for the Badges and Bravery 50-50 raffle. It's presented by Northtown Automotive. Guaranteed $10,000 jackpot while supporting the cause, which is most important here. Proceeds benefiting the Buffalo Police and Firefighter Arno Memorial Foundation. The drawing is February 1st. You can get in on it now at sabres.com/50-50. So much hockey last night and really incredible races across the league within divisions, wild card, all the rest of it. Shayna Goldman from The Athletic is with us. And Shayna, we saw some very poor goaltending last night. We saw more goaltending injuries last night. So who needs a goalie? Who's at the front of the line right now for needing a netminder?
Oh, wow. Let's go Edmonton to start. Why not, right? Yeah, let's go the obvious. Let's just, like, let's hit them while they're down in the goalie department, because no one was rooting for a Tristan Jarry injury, but it just, the track record was so shaky in terms of injury. I think we all knew this could have happened. It happened way sooner than expected. And it's like, here's your issue. And Stuart Skinner's been looking pretty good in Pittsburgh.
Well, this is the thing.
Down the road from you in New Jersey, they let Markstrom in for 9. And now, like, can New Jersey add somebody there too?
No.
Maybe they should.
But when you signed Jake Allen to a 6-year deal, and you had to do it because, yes, I get you brought the AAV down, but then you give Jacob Markstrom a 2-year extension early when he's been inconsistent at best since coming to the Devils. And yes, he had really good stretches last year. I don't want to, like, you know, pretend he didn't. But I think at the end of the day, he's not playing at the level he was in Calgary and that we know he can be. So here's what, a 34-year-old goaltender you're signing early for 2 years. Great going there.
And just to put this into context and why we came out of the blocks with goaltending, Buffalo obviously still carrying 3. Ottawa just signing James Reimer to a tryout. Vegas already lost Aiden Hill earlier. Carter Hart got hurt again last night.
Edmonton, Montreal has 3.
Montreal's got 3. Edmonton, who you mentioned, is Edmonton, and yet they beat Winnipeg last night with the reigning MVP, who cannot win a game to save the Jets season because they've lost 11 in a row. So it doesn't matter whether you have the MVP and on. And the Ducks, of course, are here tomorrow. They're allowing 5 goals a game over the last 11 games. Shayna, like this, it can sound tongue in cheek when we talk about goaltending, but who's to say who's good? And who knows what to do next? Like, I am legitimately sitting here asking this question, having no clue how it's all going to unfold.
Who is to say who's good, honestly? Because where you can call it parity, you could say it's a middling league. Two things could be true right now, right? And it really feels like that's happening. And you're seeing some teams, the goaltending can't save them. Jets, perfect example of that, because Hellebuck has not been the problem. It's the roster in front of him, right? Like, it's hurting them. Even you look at the Dallas Stars, they're a great contender. And I feel like Jake Oettinger has not been at his best this year either. So, you know, for some of the teams, the goaltending doesn't matter right now because it gives you a chance to look at your team and really figure out what you need to do in front of the blue paint to be good, right? So then when you get to the playoffs, you hope that everything can come together. And sometimes it does. We've seen that happen for Edmonton in seasons past, you know? Some of the situations, it's like, you know, the injuries or absences. So, like, Ottawa's in a tougher spot too because you do have a starting goalie. He hasn't been at his best this year, but we've seen Linus Ullmark be the guy when you need him to be. So it's like, just how much can you truly upgrade there? Or if you have a short-term injury, like in the Ducks case, like, what do you do in that situation? Like, your hands are kind of tied, so it makes it even more complicated.
The Nashville Predators have won 7 of their last 10. They're 7-3 in their last 10. And just knocking on the door, is Nashville going to make a push and somehow get in the playoffs in the Western Conference?
They could, because, like, they have no shot of getting into those top 3 seeds in the Central Division. Yeah. But the wild card really is going to be open, and there's a lot of bed in the Pacific Division that's going to shake this up even more. I mean, you have Seattle in 3rd place right now. The Kings have struggled. The Ducks have hit their wall. The Sharks are still cooking. So there's room to make the playoffs in the West. I feel like it's something maybe like we didn't expect it to be as wide open, because a couple of weeks ago it did feel like here are the good teams and then here's everybody else. Yeah. And it still feels that way, but I guess it's just expanding more because Vegas has struggled as much as they are. And we know the Oilers are also flawed. So could they do it? Totally. Should they? That's going to be the bigger question here, because we saw it when they had their turnaround at that time. It was like, do you buy in at this moment, or do you say, you know what, there's the vision? And it felt like that turnaround pushed them to have such a big offseason. It hasn't aged well, and now they're here. So it's like, what do you do now? And they're in a really hard spot because, look, Philip Forsberg and, you know, Roman Josi are great cornerstones to build mm-hmm. around. There's no question about it. And now that Stamkos and O'Reilly are clicking and you have someone like Evangelista coming up and he's been really effective too, you know, that could sway your mind to go one way, but it's like, do you have the creativity to support this team properly? Because past moves have failed spectacularly so far.
The crazy part with Nashville is, and while he did win a low-scoring shootout game last night, this turnaround, if you will, has not been on the back of Saros. Mm-hmm. His goals against mm-hmm. has been pretty plain. But based on everything we just talked about with other teams and their goaltending, like at the start of the year, we were saying, oh my gosh, Nashville's going to be stuck with this Saros contract forever, and he's never going to get back to his level. Well, what if he does, with team success here, inch closer to his level, trick a few people into believing it, and then because there might be such a need at the deadline for a true number one, Saros's value is actually high compared to how we were talking about him in October and November?
That would be something. I like what you're getting at because I can see Saros getting back up to that level for sure, because we've seen it before. Even some of like his really good years, if you look at the season-wide numbers, they'll be amazing. And it's kind of like a half and half split of the year where it's not always across, you know, all 60 something of his starts because they play him a ton. If a trade were was going to happen though, I would bet on the off season because one, we don't see goalie trades happen very often in season. I think the cap going up this year will give teams the space and, you know, there's contracts to offload and situations like that. And it's tough. It's tough to move a goalie in the middle of the year. It really is. And I feel like the teams that do need a true number one are going to need that time to make the space for it.
Yeah, and tougher so in season for Nashville because obviously they did not intend to miss last year after reloading. And I don't think they would walk away from being a good team with Saros as a part of it at the deadline. I really don't. But you never know what somebody offers, right, in the pursuit of that. Marty, what else you got?
What else do I got? Toronto and Philly played a pretty like exciting 2-1 overtime game last night. Toronto's trying to make a push now. Philly's there. So like, which one of those two teams is more likely to say we are a true contender in the Eastern Conference?
I'm going to go Toronto, dare I say, because I think the Flyers have been smart about their patient approach. I feel like the one thing with Danny Briere so far is you're seeing they've been in playoff positioning before as the deadline nears, and they still go, no, we're going to stick to the plan. And I do respect that because I think we see it all the time where teams get blinded by recent results when they're not on that actual true trajectory, get blinded by it and then just like jump ahead and it ends up burning them in the long term. So I think they'll stay patient. The Leafs, on the other hand, don't have a future outlook like that, right? Because they've been contending for this long and, you know, the pipeline is not stocked or anything like that. I think you have no choice but to either go for it or try to quickly retool. But like, it's one or the other, not both. And you have to like make that stand and make it sooner. This recent stretch where they're turning things around, you know, like they're 6-2-2 in their last 10. They're playing a little bit more exciting, which is something else after the start of their year. Maybe they go for it a little bit more. I feel like at this point, you know, what are you going to do?
Right.
Like at this rate, could you make the playoffs? Probably, but will you do any damage in the postseason is going to be the bigger question. And I don't see them as a team that will step back and say, hey, we look like we could be the 3 seed, but we actually don't trust ourselves. Like, I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, they are 6-0-2 in the last 8. Hildeby was really good last night. You mentioned Pittsburgh earlier and the fact that Skinner's fit in and he's won 3 in a row, part of the Penguins 6-game win streak. I mean, even Boston, again, I mean, they've done this multiple times this year, lose 6 in a row. Now they've won 3 of the last 4, right? And these are the reasons why the Eastern Conference is so jammed and where Buffalo sits today, which is wild card 2, and everybody in our market talking about winning 12 of 13 and what's next, not just the next game, but the outlook for the Sabres, Shayna, between now and the deadline. What do you think they're going to do with Alex Tuch? And beyond that, would you see them as buyers now?
I need to see how the next few weeks go before I say they're buyers because everything's so tight in the East, right? And I think we've seen it before. I think about a team like Detroit. I think they've gone too cautious with it, but sometimes it's like, wow, this team looks like they're going to just make it and they still don't buy at the deadline. Kekalainen is completely different than Steve Yzerman, right? Because he is someone that takes those big swings. We've seen it. You know, you look at that, his time in Columbus, if there's an opportunity, he goes for it. But I think you still need a little bit of a measured approach with it. And I don't think it's going to be like, okay, they're two out of a wild card seed. Now you go all in, because realistically you have to think like, what's the plan here? I think with Tuck, you can wait out the situation. I think you have to wait out the situation because there aren't going to be a ton of top wingers on the market. And I think that teams with these players are going to have all the leverage. Like, say the Rangers decide to move a Panarin, or the Sabres ultimately decide to move someone like Tuck. We all know what the free agent class looks like next year. We all know there's only so many true top six wingers on the market. So you don't have to jump and worry that the best offer is going to win. I don't think in this case, sometimes teams, like, they play their hand a little bit too long and it burns them. I don't think that'll happen in this case. So you can take your time to see what this team needs, what this team looks like, and go from there and see how the rest of the Eastern Conference develops around it. Because, like you mentioned, the Bruins, like, they're so inconsistent. Are they going to step back? Are they also going to buy? Once you start seeing what other teams' plans are, I think then you can, you know, operate accordingly.
Well, the Sabres did get in a wild card spot yesterday in the place of the Washington Capitals, who fell off. Now, in 2026, the Capitals have lost to Ottawa, they've lost to Chicago, and they've lost to Dallas, who have not been really good. And they beat the Anaheim Ducks, but again, as we documented earlier, Anaheim is not doing so well right now. Do you think Washington can recover, or are they like, you know, the Cinderella turning into a pumpkin type of situation?
I'm a little bit higher on the Capitals. Like, I can see them jumping into the Metro ahead of the Flyers right now. And some of that's because the Devils are yikes. And I don't think, you know, the Rangers at this point have a shot either with their injury situation. So for me, I look at that third spot and I go, it could be Washington that jumps over Pittsburgh. I think they have been one of the more interesting teams at in the offseason, at the deadline. I think that their front office has done a really good job figuring out what they need and finding under the radar options. So I'm intrigued what they're going to do here, because I don't think they're totally cooked yet. Like, I think in this weakened Eastern Conference, they have a shot.
I don't think anybody is, and that may be hard to believe based on Ottawa dropping 5 of 7 and the Jackets again losing 3 in a row. But, like, out of those two that are sitting there at the bottom, who do you think would be first to make a big move?
I could see it's tough because you're going to go for, like, team tendencies, right? And team tendencies say probably neither one at this point. You know, neither one of these teams is like this big swing taking the leap, but they also haven't been in a position where they should. Something about Columbus, though, I like. Can't explain it. There's just like,
they can't get healthy. They're never healthy. That's the problem.
They're the Columbus Broken Jackets. They got to stay true to their identity.
I mean, the reason I'm asking, because I feel like they are constantly tweaking to try. Like, they bring in Marchment. He gets points in 6 of the first 7 games. Now he's out week to week, right? Like, this is the luck, the poor luck that this team deals with.
Yeah, and even Werenski, you know, like, we saw him miss a couple games here or there. Lucky it wasn't anything more, because we've seen in the past him have injury issues as well. But, like, I look at them and I think they have a ton of cap space, they have a ton of assets, and I feel like that makes more sense to me than Ottawa, just because we don't know what's going on with Ullmark, and we don't know when he's going to return, because if they don't have him, I don't think there's any point in taking this giant swing, as much as he struggled this year, because it's not like anybody else is stepping up, and I don't think they're going to be a team that takes that, like, big goalie leap regardless. You know, I think we're seeing players like Shane Pinto prove they can be that second wave that this team was missing, and their second line is finding its footing, and I think Claude Drew is really good. So maybe, like, you know, you punch up the forward group with one more addition, maybe add one low-key blue liner, and it's like, there's something there. I just don't know if they're going to be in the position to do it. It really all comes down to Ullmark.
I was saying to Duffer in the break, look, Connor McDavid is in the West. Nathan MacKinnon is in the West. Maclean Celebrini is in the West. Connor Bedard is in the West. And we're probably going to see Gavin McKenna in the West, the way that the standings are in the Western Conference really falling out. But it could be Winnipeg. Do you think Winnipeg is that bad that they are last in the NHL right now and they could stay there?
Yeah, they're that bad right now. It's gonna come down to the deadline. But again, this is not a team that's going to, like, buy their way out of trouble. I think we've seen that before, of, like, a projected contender taking a desperate swing to do it, even though they shouldn't. I don't look at the Jets and see that, because they have always taken a quieter approach. And it's part of the reason why they're here, right? Like, the Central Division is so tough because you're going to be measuring yourself constantly to the Stars and the Avalanche. They are the gold standard right now. Doesn't matter if they haven't won, but those are the teams that always come out of that division. You could take two approaches here. You could do nothing and say, well, we can't compete with them anyway, right? Like at the deadline last year, the Avs and the Stars were buying a ton and the Jets were like, okay, we're not, when they absolutely should have been. Or you could do what the Wild are doing, like, okay, you go for Quinn Hughes, you make that, you know, that leap and try to keep yourself in that race. Mm-hmm. The Jets have done the polar opposite. They lose Ehlers, they don't have a replacement. They have a center issue last year and they think Jonathan Toews is going to be the answer. They're shorthanded to start the year with injuries. They don't have anyone ready to step up either. So a team that struggled to score in the playoffs last year after having such a good regular season has just completely crumbled. So could they actually stay that low? I could see a Calgary or Vancouver sliding below them because I think they have more players to sell and they would take that more aggressive approach. But that, again, is another indictment on the front office for not doing what needs to be done when it needs to be done.
Next week, you will answer the question, what will Bill Guerin give up to acquire the other two Hughes from New Jersey to make his team what he hopes it would be for the stretch? Now, in all seriousness, Shanna, thank you, as always. Great to see you once again. Happy 2026. We'll see you next week. Of course, we are inching ever closer to the Ryan Miller Catwalk for Charity. It is a week away. It's presented by the New Era Cap Foundation, and it's at Babeville, Friday, January 16th. Tickets available at sabres.com/catwalk. Back after this.
Hey, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Good morning. If you could get the show off the air, let's bring off the air on the air. Hey, Paul, we're going to start you with a brain bender of a question if you want it. Everyone can play the home version of the game. Name the two sports logos that have a tongue. That's what we did in the break.
There's only the two. The Rolling Stones.
All right, hey, you know, that's a partial credit. There are two
that's
logos
a good one, actually,
with,
yeah,
with a tongue. The Jaguars, of course, are one. That's how this came up. Like, yeah, we've all just accepted the Jaguars have a teal tongue.
But there's not a lot of there's not a lot of sample size for what other teams do. There's only one other tongue in a logo. And it is in the NFL.
Yeah. We'll give it to you. We'll let the listeners play the home game. All right, ready? 3, 2, 1. The Bears.
The Bears.
The Chicago Bears bear in its roar is showing you its tongue.
And it's orange.
Two tongues in sports, Paul. There you go. For the Sabres' next reverse retro jersey, maybe the Sabre could stick his tongue out or something like that.
For some reason, I was thinking the Detroit Tigers, but
they might have a tiger that you can see. Like, we're talking like primary logo having a tongue.
Oh, you know what, though? That's good because the logo with the tiger like going through the D.
Yeah.
Tongue.
Oh, wow.
That's a good one. Paul, we need to update our list. This should count.
Okay. We're up to three.
I like it.
Paul Hamilton joining us. His appearance brought to you by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. Paul, were you relaxed when it was 4-3? Jeez.
I tell you what, for many years, that game would have been lost. They would have panicked. And would have lost it probably in overtime or a shootout or something like that. And but, you know, there was – and Lindy Ruff, you know, I was watching him when he called timeout. He wasn't going crazy. He wasn't screaming or anything like that. And a good timeout, by the way. I mean, a lot of coaches want to wait until the last minute no matter what. But it was time just to bring the guys over and say, look it. Calm down. You know, you're fine. Don't worry about it. I mean, you guys know how to handle the leads. You've been doing it for how long now? For the last 11 or 12 games. And calm yourself down. Start winning some battles on the wall. And you know, you got this. You know how to do this. And they did. They had a one-goal lead, which is something they've gotten pretty good at, actually, since the Seattle game, where they, you know how to protect the lead. They did for the rest of the game. Got the the empty net goal, and that was that. They won the hockey game.
Paul, did you see anything along the way, like from 4-0 to 4-3, like they took their foot off the gas, a couple bounces? Like, was it the kind of thing where, you know, Lindy could say calm down, but also the message might be, like, let's not lose what we had here? Because they'd been in pretty firm control of the game from the start.
Yeah, well, the first, you get the double minor for high sticking, and again, a late penalty, if that's the one thing they have not fixed, and that's a mistake. I mean, it's just, you accidentally, it's not like you had a stupid hooking penalty, or you took a stooping slashing penalty, or, I mean, you accidentally high stick somebody and you got cut and you wound up with a 4-minute penalty. Yeah. So off you go. But still, it's a late penalty. And right 9 seconds before it's over, a puck bounces around. All the next thing you know, it's in the slot to DeBrusque and it's in the net. Well, I'm not blaming Lukanen or really anybody else on that. It's bad luck. All of a sudden, a bouncing puck goes to the right guy, and it's in the net. Okay, you're still okay. It's only 4-1. But now you've got to spend the next 2 minutes killing another penalty again because you got to take the second of the 4 minutes. They didn't score on that, but it still gives them some momentum to get going. And, you get another one where the right guy winds up in the slot as he's spinning. He rips the shot. That goes in.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's 4-2. And then you do make a mistake on the 4-3 goal. I thought Byram went down too soon, and the goal scorer just dances around him, walks in, picks the far side, and now it's a hockey game. Now it's 4-3, and it's 3 goals and 5:38. And I don't think Zach Metsa, when he scored his first NHL goal, who had any inkling whatsoever that it was going to be the game-winning goal, because right. he made it 4-0 in the third period.
Right, they wanted to make sure his goal was really truly meaningful by getting that one. Did you think, Paul, throughout the 4-3 stretch there, that Lukanen had still been okay? I think the rest of the game, no one would debate. I mean, even the numbers show, like, the game overall, Lukanen was awesome. What about in that 5 minutes? I think maybe the only one you'd really want to save on was the third one.
Yeah, the third one, I'm thinking to myself, was he off his angle?
Mm-hmm.
Where was he too deep? Where, the goal scorer had the far corner to hit. Whereas maybe if he's out a little bit more, there's nothing to shoot at. The goal scorer doesn't have that. He's going to have to put it through him to put it in the net. So, and I think he maybe got fooled when Byram went down. Thinking it might get blocked there. Or, something on those lines, and instead he just walked around him and then let it go. So that's where maybe he got fooled on that one, was just thinking the puck was coming then, and it wasn't, and it wound up in the net. So, yeah, of the three, that might be the one that where you thought maybe he should have had that one. I had the goalie who's sitting there with you who was pretty upset with that shot, too, going in.
So you're sitting with Owen. Owen, I know you tweeted during the game, and Paul, your thoughts on this as well, that Lukanen kind of, the big save at the big moment, that was early in the game. He made bigger – like, he was part of the reason they were up 4-0. Like, it's – sometimes we think about the only big moments are late in games, but he made big saves early.
Yeah, to me, there's a time in every game where a goalie can truly make his impact felt, and it comes at different times. Often it is late, but to me, in that first period, the penalty kill really was his time to make a difference in that game, and he did, and it allowed the Sabres to really find their game. And I think a bunch of the players spoke about that post-game, if I'm not wrong. Right, Paul?
Yeah, the Canucks had 7 shots on goal, and they were all in that one power play. All 7 of them were. And as a matter of fact, yes, Vancouver did have 35 shots, and it looks like maybe they dominated the game. 12 of the 35 were on the power play. Buffalo did not get a power play shot. So if you take away the power play shots, no, the shots are pretty even. It's 23-20. It doesn't look as bad, but the Canucks were buzzing when they had the power play. They were getting shots. Lukanen and really that first power play, I love the desperation by Lukanen and everybody around him. There was a puck bouncing around. You want to say a schmozzel. That puck was bouncing around. Players were bouncing around. Lukanen and every Sabre were doing everything they possibly could to make sure that puck didn't wind up in the back of the net.
Yeah.
And they did. I just loved the desperation I saw there throughout that whole penalty kill. In the first period, too, they came out very well. I liked the battles, on the walls. They were coming in and outnumbering and winning battles, and and doing everything they talked about doing immediately following that Columbus game. It's like, okay, we got to put this away, and we got to get back to what we were doing, and that's what they did. They got back to what they were doing, and then next thing you know, they started scoring goals on their own and taking that 3-0 lead right, you know, pretty quick early on.
That is something, Paul, that I think everyone has noticed a little bit more recently. Last night, you mentioned those couple moments. There's a play in the third where Thompson like tackles Pettersson while he's in the front of the net. There was the play where was it Byram? No, it was Norris saved it from going in. If you look off to the left, Power has tackled a guy down to the ice. So you're kind of getting it from everybody right now, and that's maybe been one of these consistent themes through, you know, the last, what, 11, 12 games?
You know what I loved about that Thompson play? He lost the draw and took the centerman to the net. Very often, if you lose the draw, you're mad, and your guy goes to the net and you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And next thing you know, it's in the net. He stayed right with him and was right on him, as you mentioned, took him down. And, you know, that really impressed me there that, okay, again, they're competing. All right, he didn't win the draw, but he didn't stop competing. And sometimes, you know, in past years, he gets criticized for some of his compete at times. But, you know, that was a great play, and a play that when you look at it at the end could have been the difference between getting 2 points or 1 point.
Paul Hamilton joining us on the Western Hotline. Sabres beat Vancouver. Paul, how do you feel about Byram's overall season right now? He got another 2 assists last night. Do you feel like he's playing his best hockey he has in this uniform?
Yeah, I mean, he played his worst hockey for a while. It was just like it didn't matter what partner he had or who he was with. He was a turnover machine. It was winding up in the net. And I just remember saying to myself many times early on, like, what is wrong with him? I don't get this. I was one of them that I thought they did a good job in signing him. I thought it was a good signing to bring him back. And then he was playing like that. I just didn't understand it. I didn't understand what was going on. I was talking to him about it, Lindy Ruff about it. And I've, you know, once he straightened it out and is playing really good hockey now, and we noticed the offense, but he's playing really good hockey in his own zone too. Take away the Columbus game. You know, really, really buckling down, you know, killing plays, getting the puck out of the zone with good passes, the whole thing. And I mean, this is the guy that it's like one extreme to the other. He's like really, really good now, and he was really, really bad before. And, you know, now, and I think a lot of the, I think Owen Power has improved his game, especially that, you know, that, in front, you know, covering people in front of the net, where he would just he'd wind up being there. He was able to figure out the play and be in the right place, but he wouldn't cover the guy. And next thing you know, it was in the net. And I've noticed that has improved. He was very active last night, you know, trying to get into the offense. It didn't. He did get an assist early, but I think that might have been some of the most active play I've seen from him in the offensive zone during last night's game.
Yeah, I've thought about that. Like Byram especially seems like one of these guys that is probably playing his best when he's freed up to move all over the ice and jump up. And I don't necessarily remember what Lindy was always like on that front with defensemen, but it definitely seems like he's given those guys license to jump up and play a little more free.
I thought you were going to say you didn't remember what Lindy was like when he played.
Well, I definitely don't remember that.
You didn't see Lindy play. What are you talking about?
Definitely don't remember that.
I don't think you were alive for any of his career, were you?
No, I think it just ended right before. Yeah.
You weren't there for when he and Billy Smith attacked each other.
Paul Hamilton with us on the Wesher Hotline. Sabres over the Canucks yesterday. Paul, the penalty kill gets another goal yesterday. McLeod and Tuck. That duo, I mean, it's definitely their number one duo when they start a PK. They've got that ability to move down the other end of the ice. Like their speed really has become a weapon. I mean, you can even go back. Last year, I think Tuck led the league in shorthanded goals, but you're seeing it, you know, a lot. Like, they're at least getting chances. And I think there was another one later in the game after they scored.
back in the lores of Buffalo Sabre hockey, I think there weren't two better penalty killers together than Don Luce and Craig Ramsey back in the 70s, and they get talked about even to this day, you know, in Sabre history, and I think McLeod and Tuck can rival that. They just seem to have a very, very good, and it's not just, you know, the goal scoring that they do. It's they get the opportunity to do it. They're not afraid to take the opportunity, but they're so good at the actual kill. You know, they're so good in their own zone. They have good sticks. They're not afraid to block a shot. The whole thing. They're just a very good pair together who can read each other extremely well. Now, it helped that Tom Willander was pathetic at trying to cover the pass across. I mean, a two-on-one is simple. Goaltender is a shooter, and the one has to take away the pass. Well, that was horrendous. I mean, Tuck had an easy pass over to McLeod for the layup goal. They do that too. I mean, Tuck is such a good passer that sometimes when it looks like maybe the defenseman has taken it away, they really haven't, and he gets it through. And, you know, they still wind up scoring. So they're a very dynamic pair on the penalty kill, and a big reason why the Sabres have done so well on the kill this year.
Paul Hamilton joining us, recapping the Sabres and Canucks. It's the Rangers coming up Thursday. One more thing, Joe. Paul, Lindy said that Colton Ellis will get a game soon, right?
Yeah, I wonder if maybe it's the Ranger game. Could be. I mean, we'll wait and see. Lukanen's numbers until recently were so much better at home than on the road. But then he goes to New Jersey and has that great game. That was his first road win of the year. So maybe home and road doesn't really matter too much to him anymore. He has played, I still think he played a good game last night. So I'll say he's played 4 out of 5 really good games. The Columbus game, of course, would be the one that he and his teammates weren't too good in. And his numbers at home are still, even though 3 went in the net on him in the third period, he's still 6-1 at home with a 1.98 and a 9.24 save percentage. So kind of maybe have it in the back of my mind, possibly the Ranger game, but I haven't gotten any inkling at all when that game might come. But, Lindy did say that it's coming.
All right. Paul, thank you. You got a pick for Sunday? How you feel? You have a good vibe about the Bills and Jags?
You don't want my pick.
All right. Well, actually, I know you don't make predictions. Uh-oh. Isn't that your thing? You don't make predictions. So
you know what, though, with my pick, and the reason it could be wrong, is I look at, you know, give the Jags credit. They've done well. But a lot of the numbers they've rolled up offensively and defensively have been against Tennessee. It hasn't been. And other people could say, yeah, but the Bills did theirs against Miami and the Jets. And Buffalo did actually lose to Miami once. But, some of what the Jags have done have been against in a division that probably isn't the best division out. So that could maybe skew what I'm thinking there.
All right.
With their win streak.
All right. Resume talk from Paul. Doesn't like the Jags resume. Paul, thank you.
Take care, guys.
Paul Hamilton, his appearance brought to you by Railax. Honda Railax, we got this. So last night in the NHL, the Sabres won. There's another game, 9-0.
Yeah. Devils and Islanders.
Islanders beat the Devils 9-0. And you might think, like, all right, well, I mean, you know, 9-0 is a pretty weird game. Markstrom for the Devils stayed in for the whole game. The other goalie, Sorokin, had 44 saves.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Devils, if you follow some of these, like, on the Devils deserved to win a game.
The deserve-o-meter that MoneyPuck does is, like, had New Jersey at, like, 80%.
They should have won a game, and they lost 9-0.
Yeah.
And goals save above expected. Like, whatever. You don't have to love these stats, but it is the worst goaltending performance in league history since watching expected goals. So I couldn't resist. I popped up the highlights. Like, I got to see what happens here. Like, did this guy's skates fall off?
Yeah, Markstrom, right?
Yeah. Markstrom.
Jacob Markstrom.
Like, what happened? Was he – how could it be that bad?
Also, never getting pulled.
Yeah.
9-0, and he never got pulled.
He was 7.7 goals below expected.
So we had our crack research analyst here, our senior goaltending correspondent Owen Parker, take a look at it. Like, you saw this and had to think, like, all right, how bad was it?
It was bad.
It was that bad?
It was bad.
I thought he would have fallen down three times to give up that number.
He might as well have.
Okay.
I mean, there were a few in there that were really ugly, ugly, ugly goals. There was one that I think Casey Cizikas, who's not exactly an all-star, was driving the net from the circle and, like, slipped it five hole for when he really had no reason to have opened up, and he was just he couldn't stop anything. And a lot of this is just sometimes you can't track the puck that night, and that happens. And what normally happens on a night where you very clearly can't track the puck, which is what Markstrom was going through last night, is your coach sees that and goes, I'm going to get that guy out of there because he can't stop anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that did not happen last night. I said to Joe Calley this morning, like, it was the first thing I said to him this morning. I was like, did you see New Jersey? This was insane.
Yeah.
And my first thought was, well, they have to be playing tonight. Because the only reason that you would ever not pull that guy from that game is because you're saving your backup to play a back-to-back the next night. New Jersey does not play tonight.
Hmm.
New Jersey did not play on Monday night. So for some reason, Sheldon Keefe decided
roasted
to
his goalie.
Light
leave,
Markstrom
leave
on fire.
Yeah.
And just leave him there.
Yeah.
It was...
Was there anything to do with, like, when the goals were scored? Like, didn't that happen with Eric Comrie when he let in 10 for the Sabres against Dallas? And, like, so many of them came in, like, the last 10 minutes. It's like, what, am I going to pull a guy for 2 minutes?
Right. Yes, and I if I'm not mistaken, they also played either the night before or the night after that.
Okay, yeah.
And, like, that is always, to me, like, the only situation that I can ever see a coach deciding to let his guy rot like that is, A, you're on a back-to-back, or B, you're trying to send a message to the guy.
Well.
And I don't know.
What
that,
a game. I just pulled up really quickly that game against Dallas where Comrie led in 10. What was Markstrom's number? For
minus 7.7.
Yeah. So he allowed 7.7 more goals than what were expected.
Yeah.
Comrie, in the game he led in 10 against Dallas a couple years ago, it was minus 5.3.
Right.
That's pretty bad,
so
too.
It's more than, like, 2.5 goals worse than that game?
Yeah.
Right.
I guess so.
Which, yeah, it's crazy.
Sabres play the Rangers tomorrow, and then they play the Ducks.
Yeah.
And
Ducks are good this year.
They are good this year. They're on an East Coast trip. They just got beat by the Flyers last night, 5-2.
Mm-hmm.
And did you see Trevor Zegras?
Yeah, the phone.
Zegras scored, and his celebration was to pick up and hang up a phone.
Yeah.
And he explained that that's how quick the call he got when he got traded was.
Did you see that interview where he said that?
That's awesome.
Yeah, right. Like,
you could see in the interview postgame where he said that to, I forget who it was. Or it might have been Hartnell.
NBC Sports Philadelphia asked him about that. How good did it feel to score two goals? And he said, bleeping amazing, bleeping amazing.
Yeah. He's incredible.
That's, like, awesome.
That's the most obvious I've ever seen a guy. Like, I was so glad to just.
The celebration is so great. Recreating the trade call, which by the video of it lasted this long. Hello, Trevor, you've been traded to Philadelphia. Click.
Yeah.
So that was his celebration.
It was very, very, very
also good. Maybe I should wind it back on the Ducks have been good this year because they are in a 7-game losing streak.
All right, bring them to town. Let's go.
7-game losing streak.
Yeah.
803-0550. Joe Marino, the Locked On Bills podcast, 8 o'clock. We further look into this Bills-Jaguars matchup. When we get back, get some football talk in, including a new fantasy football playoff format that I've just been introduced to in the last 10 minutes. It's coming up here on WGR.